This episode of the Bulletin with UBS was first broadcast on the 23rd of August 2015 on Monocle 24. Hello and welcome to the Bulletin with UBS on Monocle 24. Each week we'll be hearing from the sharpest minds and freshest thinkers in the world of finance, taking you beyond the numbers and the hype and getting to the heart of the big issues of the day. This week we're talking about cracking BRICS and considering how Brazil, Russia, India, China and South Africa are shaping up in another tough year for emerging market economies. We'll explore the impact of tumbling commodity prices, run the rule over various reform policies to gauge their effectiveness, and ask our panel of international experts what they think will be the issues to build or break the BRICS in the future. We start with the background. How do our guests this week read the current global EM situation, and how has this shaped the load carried by the BRICS? It's a question of rebalancing, according to Jorge Mariscal, Chief Investment Officer for Emerging Markets at UBS Wealth Management.
The rich nations are now more of a saving nature than a consumption nature. And that has meant that demand for exports from the emerging markets to the developed world have been coming down. And commodities have also been declining. So the benefits that they derive in the 2000s are now turning into headwinds for growth. And that's affecting across the board all the emerging markets, but of course the BRICS as well.
Lutfi Siddiqui looks after the emerging market business for FX rates and credit at UBS Investment Bank.
The clustering of these countries into the BRICS acronym was always imperfect because there's huge diversity within that group. But perhaps where it is useful is that these countries do provide a representative sample of the diversity within the emerging markets complex. On one end of the spectrum, you have Brazil and Russia, you have India at the other end of the spectrum, and China is a special case, but a special case that has changed complexion in recent weeks.
Bob Swarup is a financial commentator and investor and author of Money Mania. How does he define the problems facing the BRICS?
The problem with the BRICS is they're turning out a bit half-baked at the moment. And the problem you have is that I think the broader economic landscape is not very favorable to them. You know, if you look at emerging markets in general, I mean, they've been the recipients of all of the stimulus in many ways that everybody else has poured into markets over the last few years. So as a result, I mean, in a world where there isn't really much growth, most investors have really relied on emerging markets as being a little specter of growth in their portfolio. Now that's starting to go away. You have two big issues. One is that the dollar in recent years has strengthened a lot. Increasingly, as everyone starts to worry about the Fed tightening, what you have is a problem where most emerging markets have issued a lot of debt in recent years, especially in dollars, at a time when their currencies are diverging rapidly from dollars. So they're in the worst of all scenarios as the Fed tightens. Secondly, I think there's been all the jitters that China has caused.
By way of background, Angus Grigg in Shanghai explains how fixed asset investment is the issue for China.
China, like most other BRIC nations, is overly reliant on one sector to drive growth in its economy. Now, the issue for the likes of Brazil and Russia has been an over-reliance on commodity prices. For Russia, that's oil. For Brazil, that's iron ore. But for China, the over-reliance has been on fixed asset investment, which is basically building stuff. So for the last 15 years, China has probably built 30 to 40 years of infrastructure in those 15 years, and this simply couldn't go on. So the problem for China is that the growth model needs to change, and this is why we're seeing the sort of pains or the slowdown in China at the moment, because finally the sort of Communist Party here in China have knuckled down on some difficult reforms and decided that while there was sort of easy growth to be had by building particularly housing, but to a lesser extent highways and other infrastructure, they now need to change their growth model to be more reliant on consumer-driven demand.
Peter Hobson, regular Monocle contributor from the Moscow Times, provides the Russian perspective on the problem. What's at the heart of it?
The key thing that's hitting the Russian economy is oil prices. So they're going down and down and down. We thought the worst was over early in the year, and then the decline renewed, and so we're now under $50 a barrel, which for Russia is terrible, terrible news. So as a result of that, the ruble is falling, which means that inflation has gone up, and consumer demand, which is one of the key driving forces of the economy, is falling because wages are down. Investment is also falling, and GDP is shrinking at an ever faster pace. And the theory was earlier in the year that the bottom of the crisis would happen sometime in the first half of the year. And that looked as if it was going to be the case until this new oil fall. And now, who knows, it could have happened in the second quarter. It may happen in the third quarter. And it may be that there is no return to growth until 2017, depending on how the oil price does.
Our experts' views there on the issues causing cracks in the BRICS. Still to come on the Bulletin with UBS, we'll focus country by country to get a sense of what could be in store next. We start with Brazil. Recession is now predicted to extend into 2016. How much of a setback or a surprise is this? Jorge Mariscal.
The case of Brazil is interesting. They obviously are suffering from low commodity prices, particularly iron ore and forestry products. But they also have problems of their own making. You know, there's a fair amount of political instability, corruption scandals, an attempt to impeach the president, high inflation, low productivity. So the country is in many ways responsible for its own problems. There is some hope that the current government is beginning to hear the calls for change and are introducing a new set of economic reforms, but it's early days to be able to know whether that's going to work. So recession is in the cards for Brazil this year and maybe a modest recovery next year.
Bob Swarup looks to social factors when it comes to Brazil.
The social tensions that are being caused by a weaker economy are far, far more visible. Now there's a constant hubbub in the papers constantly about corruption, about, you know, charges of impeachment, potentially things like that. And what those really are symptomatic of is the fact that you have a lot of tensions emerging in the socio-political picture.
To Russia next, where both currency and the whole economy are under pressure. Commodities prices, as so frequently across emerging markets, are critical here, says Jorge Mariscal.
It's clearly the oil price is a big factor for the destiny of Russia. The economy depends in about as much as 30-35% on oil and energy companies and exporters. So very much what happens with the oil affects Russia. And the other variable, of course, is international sanctions against Russia due to its involvement in the Ukraine. And those are unfortunately not likely to go away in the near term, since Russia maintains a fair amount of pressure on the Ukrainian government. So oil and sanctions are the key drivers, and either of the two of them look promising in the short term.
Lutfi Siddiqui has this perspective.
Russia, it's also expected to contract. Its fortunes are also related to, in this case, the price of oil. It's got better government balances, but it's also got an elevated inflation levels. So, you know, Russia is at that end of the spectrum.
India provides what might be the lone bright spot amongst the BRICS. Why is this? Rahul Bedi, Delhi-based journalist and regular Monocle contributor.
Well, there are two reasons for India to be the bright spot in this not-so-very happy situation. One is that we got a new government about a year ago after many years of inactivity, particularly economic inactivity. But the downside of it is that even though this new government has been in office for about 14 months, it hasn't really delivered on a lot of the economic promises that it had made. So there has been a slowdown in the economic momentum. And India, our Prime Minister attended the last summit, which was in July in Russia, and he came up with a sort of a 10-step feeble program to kickstart BRICS and to activate it. These, of course, were, you know, having a railway research center, an agricultural research center, a sports council, a soccer tournament, film festival, that kind of thing. But nothing really concrete which would galvanize BRICS and pose it as an alternative to either the IMF or the World Bank.
And how does Lutfi Siddiqui explain the more positive picture for the country?
India is on the positive side in many ways. It has a good backdrop of a political setup, a government that was elected on a structural reforms agenda. It's got a credible monetary policy framework of inflation targeting, and it provides good carry in the fixed income markets, for example. So in many ways, if the challenge for emerging markets is to engage in structural reforms so as to unlock new sources of growth, India seems to be at the positive end of the spectrum.
Next to China, where the economy is structurally slowing. Is that necessarily a bad thing? Not, according to Jorge Mariscal.
The equity market's volatility in isolation is not that big a problem. I think the problem is the accumulation of a few issues. Also, a slowing down in China's rate of growth is also not a problem. It is by design that China needs to reprofile its economy, the new normal, which has more consumption and services as opposed to fixed asset investments and excessive savings. And that rotation exercise is a huge execution challenge, but we've always felt that China has the ammunition and the wherewithal and the reserves to manage through that. And in that process, they needed to increase the availability of credit, and they also needed to allow for many targeted stimulus measures in order for that adjustment to take place.
So what do Chinese prospects look like? Angus Grigg provides perspective from Shanghai.
Yeah, I think there will be. You can be reasonably confident that the Chinese government are actually fairly good economic managers. They've shown over two decades that they've been able to ride out things like the Asian financial crisis and also the global financial crisis. And so they've got a pretty good handle on the economy, and they've shown themselves to be reasonably responsive to sharp slowdowns in growth. So I think you will see over the next year, and indeed you are already seeing, the rollout of some pretty significant reforms. And so the one that has been probably mentioned most often is liberalising the currency, opening up the financial sector somewhat. Now, we've actually seen in the last few weeks some, you know, really concrete signs of that by particularly allowing the currency to be more freely traded.
And finally, to South Africa. Is the potential impact of a US Fed rate hike the biggest thing? For the most part, that's already factored in, says Jorge Mariscal. Commodity prices, again, are more important in South Africa.
I'm of the view that the fears of the impact of Fed hikes are probably already priced in most of these economies and most of these currencies. So I'm a believer that if the Fed hikes in line with expectations, which is, you know, maybe 25 basis points this time in September, another 25 before the year is over, and then maybe another 50 to 75 basis points next year, that should be a benign thing. In fact, it would be a confirmation of the pace of recovery in the U.S. as it remaining healthy. What I think is more important for South Africa is the path of commodity prices in the future, particularly gold and some of the industrial commodities like platinum and copper. Those hold the key in my view. Now they have an offset, which is low energy prices benefit South Africa. But overall, the economy is very dependent on its mining sector. And so the key here would be to watch what happens with commodities.
Before the end of today's programme, let's get a couple of longer-term views. First, from Delhi. What's the mood in India? One of, perhaps, cautious optimism, says Rahul Bedi.
There's sort of, to use a very diplomatic word, there's cautious optimism for two reasons. One is that there's been a downturn in the Chinese economy over the last few weeks. And as I said, there's been not much progress in the Indian economy. But I think people are hopeful. But then, of course, the problem between the BRICS members is also interconnected, because they're not really partners in that sense like Europe and the US are, and they're still trying to find their feet. So it's as I said, it's something that is a work in progress, and the group is still struggling to find an identity for itself and function coherently as a group.
Are there other ways to make sense of the potentially divergent paths of China and India? There are some intriguing lessons from history to which Bob Swarup is keen to pay heed.
The way I would describe them right now is they're actually similar to where, say, Argentina and the US were at the end of the 19th century. Back then, those are the two great emerging markets, you know, huge amounts of growth, huge amounts of potential. And of course, they went down two very, very different paths. And the reason was because, you know, both countries had their issues, by the way. I mean, the US, for example, was as corrupt as Argentina and things like the 19th century. You know, we've seen all the well-known stories about robber barons and things like that. But ultimately, one of those countries, whether willingly or not, did go through enormous amounts of structural reform and a huge amount, ultimately, of trying to redistribute the benefits of growth across the population, whereas the Argentinian economy never really did that. And so for China and India, that is the big challenge. I mean, one of the things that I'm sure must haunt Modi right now is the last time the BJP were in power in India, they actually led a huge boom in growth. And when the election came round, their slogan was India Shining, and to the horror of everyone, they lost. And the reason they lost was because even though the economy was growing, actually the vast majority of the population didn't feel they were benefiting from it. And that social dynamic, I think, you know, is very important for people to pay attention to that, because if they don't, then to be bluntly honest, the growth is always going to be half-baked.
And that's Bob Swarup, bringing us to the end of this 46th edition of the Bulletin with UBS, setting the agenda in the fast-moving world of finance every week here on Monocle 24. Listen again and find out more at monocle.com or catch up via iTunes or SoundCloud. The Bulletin with UBS on Monocle 24.